Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, what a pleasure it is in the city that only wins, Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening or watching, Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. Miami Joy Taylor is in the house today. What a night. Last two nights of baseball at the iconic Fenway Park and at Dodger Stadium. Last night was nerve-wracking. Baseball owned the night. It was, you know, Joy and I were talking about this. When you live in Los Angeles, much like Boston or St. Louis or New York, Los Angeles, there's four or five baseball cities in America where families have gone for generations. And as I was watching the Dodgers last night, it hit me. I thought, here we were in this intense game, and very few people had a beer or a soda or food in their hand. Why? You could not get up. These people are baseball fans. I was everybody. Nobody was leaving their seats. You could not leave your seats. We were going to have a classic two Hall of Fame pitcher duel. A single hit or a moment could change the night. It was so fantastic.
You weren't there to be seen.
You were there to see.
And it was a moment.
It was. Baseball won the night. Dodger Stadium, iconic as it always is, was packed. It often is on the biggest nights. It was 40-year-old Adam Wainwright. 40 years old. 400-plus career starts. And one of the proudest baseball franchises, the St. Louis Cardinals, said, "Sir, can you extend our season?" He tried. And then there was Max Scherzer, great as a Tiger, great as a National, bounced around more, he'll be a Hall of Famer too. Max Scherzer, though, at 37 years old, did not have his best stuff. Oh, he was good, and he's going to be a Hall of Famer. But he didn't have great stuff, but at 37 years old, he's been in so many big spots and so many big games, he got the outs that were needed. It never looked easy. The Dodgers fall behind 1-0. And they needed every bit of their roster to win last night. So who else but Justin Turner? Sometimes he looks like an unmade bet of a dude. But if you ask anybody in Los Angeles, if there's one batter you'd want at the plate in the bottom of the ninth in Game 7, it's Justin Turner. A professional baseball hitter and my favorite Dodger, he tied the game at 1. That's in the fourth. We go to the fifth. And Scherzer now is in more trouble. Two runners on, and the Dodgers go to the bullpen. Joe Kelly, who's had a sensational season, an embattled career, and one of the nastiest curves you'll ever see, used it to get out of a very tough jam. The Dodgers bullpen on the night was magnificent. Five relievers, no runs surrendered against a very potent offense. And as Cody Bellinger has struggled all year, the former MVP, he had a very big night. Stolen bases, couple of hits. We go to the ninth, still tied. Bellinger, and again, he's very prone for the long ball. But it was stealing bases and singles last night. He gets on in the ninth, and here comes Chris Taylor, who has had a lousy month. Chris Taylor didn't even start. And here's Chris Taylor with a walk-off to send the Dodgers to the Giant series. They've never met in the postseason before. They will now.
On 2-1, Taylor. Fly ball to left and deep and done! Chris Taylor, a walk-off home run. The Dodgers are walking off to San Francisco. They win the wild card. 3-1. Here comes Taylor to the plate. They are mobbing him. The crowd is going crazy. The Dodgers advance to the National League Division Series with one mighty swing by Chris Taylor.
Chris Taylor, who'd had an awful month hitting, and Justin Turner, and Cody Bellinger, and Joe Kelly, and the rest of the bullpen, and Max Scherzer. This is not a rest on your laurels city. It's highly competitive in television, in tech, in entertainment, in agriculture, and in sports. It's LeBron factor. He came to town and everybody ramped it up. Right now, Los Angeles is the winningest pro sports city in America. The Rams win, and the Dodgers win, and the Lakers win, and the Clippers win, and now the Chargers are winning. And the reason they're winning is because very smart front offices who have been very shrewdly aggressive and spent the money that this market enables you to spend. And the Dodgers needed every dollar last night to get by a great franchise and probably the second greatest pitcher. You seam heads know the answer behind Bob Gibson in St. Louis Cardinals history. Magnificent night. Baseball gave us urgency. And when it does, it steals the night. Great win for the Dodgers. They extend the series to San Francisco. They have never met the Giants in the postseason. So these singular playoff games are odd. I'm not a huge fan. I don't think baseball's about a game. I think it's about a volume of games. It's about duration, longevity, a staff. It's about variables and elements that make a great baseball team, which the Dodgers needed all of last night. But the Dodgers were put in a position because the only team better in baseball than them was in their division, and they needed last night to win to face the Giants. They are favored, should be, as that will be as good a baseball series outside of the World Series as we've had in several years. So I want to talk about that. This is interesting. Speaking of aggressive, it used to be in America, you could be a car dealer, and nothing wrong with car dealers. We love Mercedes. You could be a car dealer, and that was enough money to own a sports franchise. Larry Miller, Utah Jazz. Marge Schott, I think, was a car dealer. The Holt family with the San Antonio Spurs. They had a Caterpillar dealership. They bought a team selling Caterpillars. And those businesses, what are those businesses about? Customer service. Loyalty. Patience. Bottom line. Making deals. Now sports and teams are way more expensive. Cowboys went on the market tomorrow. Don't believe anybody. Don't even believe Forbes. They'd sell for over $10 billion on the global market. Now teams are often owned by tech and hedge fund owners, right? Now, what are those businesses like? Aggressive. Changing every 15 minutes. Fluid. And the people that come from those industries, Mark Cuban, Steve Ballmer, Joe Tsai of the Nets, and David Tepper of Carolina, what do? Money's never an issue, and they're aggressive to a fault. And if you're a fan out there and you have a new owner, cross your fingers that he comes from tech or hedge funds. Because the kind of personalities that flourish in those industries are aggressive people. Steve Ballmer has completely changed the expectations, the veneer, and the image of the LA Clippers. And he did it quickly. I mean, really quickly. And the Nets, KD, Harden, Kyrie, Blake Griffin. The Carolina Panthers now are going to be perhaps the LA Rams East, hyper-aggressive. They went out in the last week and secured, traded for C.J. Henderson and Stephon Gilmore, two very, very good corners. And I love what this does to an organization, whether it's the Clippers, whether it's the Nets. By the way, the Milwaukee Bucks, hedge fund owner, what did they do in the offseason? They went and got P.J. Tucker, Drew Holiday. They were already good. They were already favored in the East. What I think happens when you get tech owners, when you get hedge fund owners, these are people, it's not about customer service and loyalty. It's aggressive businesses that are changing rapidly, that you have to be able to pivot quickly. And they bring that culture to their teams. And so when I saw that yesterday by Carolina, I thought, if you're a Milwaukee Bucks fan or a Brooklyn Nets fan or a Clipper fan or a Carolina Panther fan or a Dallas Maverick fan, that's what you want from your owner. Because whatever that person, he or she, the culture they made their money in, they will bring that to your franchise. Did you ever think in your life you'd say, yeah, the Milwaukee Bucks are champions and really aggressive? Well, they're kind of a small market team. Yeah, you just make things happen. So I think it's a very exciting time for some of these smaller market teams that are a little, let's be honest, nobody's going to sell the Rams anytime soon, the New York Giants. The teams that you can occasionally buy are like a Tampa Bay Rays or a Carolina Panthers or smaller market teams, right? You don't have these generational owners. So a very exciting time for some teams in this sport. And Carolina, it's very interesting. They do not care. They have become the opposite of the Packers. They hire their coach. They pay their staff. They get the best coordinator. They get Sam Darnold. They wanted to get Matt Stafford. They acknowledged yesterday, we're not done before the trading deadline. We have made multiple calls on offensive linemen. We are not done. I love this for fans. Nothing worse than static owner. Money, bottom line, every deal. Open the wallet. It's fun.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So the last 2 days, all I've heard, and baseball fans do this, the solution is always blame the manager. Instead of acknowledging your bullpen isn't good, acknowledging some of your big acquisitions aren't great. So Aaron Boone is suddenly no good, despite the fact that the Yankees went and acquired Joey Gallo, who can't hit. 160, 88 strikeouts in 58 games. That's not Aaron Boone's fault. He can't hit for him. And Dave Roberts cracks me up. Dave Roberts, in the fifth inning last night, pulled Max Scherzer. And as I was sitting on the couch, my thing was, good call. He doesn't have his best stuff. And Scherzer's great, and Scherzer wasn't happy. But Max, because he's a Hall of Famer, was just getting through. You could ask him. He didn't have his best stuff. He was just what a Hall of Famer does. He was just getting through innings. Couldn't spot his pitches. And two runners on, and this was going to be a game where you could not blow an inning. They already fell behind. They're at home. You can't blow an inning. So they bring in Joe Kelly, who, again, had a great year. Nasty curve, and it got them out of the jam. And then they went eventually to Kenley Jansen, who had a bad year last year. This year was phenomenal. This is the second-best bullpen in baseball, and two of the five relievers, the one in crisis and the one to close it, are two of their best. Folks, Greg Popovich, remember we used to call him the best coach in the NBA when Phil Jackson retired? Hasn't won a playoff series since 2017. Last 2 years, can't even get to the playoffs, and half the NBA gets to the playoffs. He can't even get to the playoffs. Bill Belichick can no longer win home football games. Forget big road playoff games. Bill can't win at home. You're as good as your talent. Last night, the decision. This was a game. And remember, Dave Roberts has massive expectations from ownership. He's got a huge payroll. That in itself is a component you deal with in a locker room. Highly compensated players. You're walking on some eggshells with some egos. It's an incredibly deep roster. You've got to keep people happy. He dealt with major injuries to the staff. Cody Bellinger was hurt. Mookie Betts was hurt. Bellinger had a bad year. Again, this is a tightrope. It's a 162-game season. A player turns on you in May, you may lose the locker room. The late Billy Martineau has said, in a baseball locker room, 10 guys love me and 10 guys hate me. I try to keep the five guys that are undecided away from the 10 guys who hate me. And Roberts has it's Joe Torre. It's a kind of a avuncular, an uncle, a fatherly sort of personality. Intense when he has to be, demanding infrequently. But go look at the NFL standings this morning. Let's start with the AFC. You're going to see a trend here. If you go look at the NFL standings, let's see who leads the AFC East. Oh, they have the best quarterback, Josh Allen. Who leads the AFC North? Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow. In my opinion, the two most talented quarterbacks. Who leads the AFC South? Right now, the quarterback playing the best, Ryan Tannehill. Who leads the AFC West? Well, Mahomes is one game out, but it's Herbert who's playing great, Derek Carr who's playing great, and Mahomes is one game out. Let's go to the NFC standings. Oh, this is remarkable. Who's leading those standings? Dak Prescott, the best quarterback in his division. Aaron Rodgers, the best quarterback in his division. Tom Brady, the best quarterback in his division. By the way, Sam Darnold is second. He's playing second best. And Kyler Murray, right now, is playing the best football in his division. You're as good as your players. You got to have closers. You got to have talent. The bottom line is, Dave Roberts, everybody thinks, give me all the good players, and I'll just insert them. Folks, you could see how upset Max Scherzer was when you pulled him out of the game. That's the eggshells. That's the tightrope of managing Hall of Fame pitchers. And Scherzer's going to be a Hall of Famer. Great with Detroit. Great with Washington. These are tough conversations. They leave marks. Scherzer wouldn't give him the ball. He shook his hand. This stuff is hard. And, you know, you guys all want to eat baseball managers alive. It's not Aaron Boone's fault that the front office signed Giancarlo Stanton, who's the same player as Aaron Judge, just older and more expensive, and they signed Joey Gallo, who can't hit, and they paid a fortune for him.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I try to be fair. Now, I'm very critical. And I remember years ago, I always tell the story, my mom was not that adaptable to the internet. She's an old British woman at the time and said, I hear you're very controversial. She had a friend. She said, Norma, my friend, says you're very controversial. And I told my mother, I said, fan is short for fanatic. If you don't tell fans what they want to hear, they get very angry, very visceral. I said, I'm not controversial. I'm outspoken, and I give strong opinions with not a lot of wiggle room, and that bothers people. You know, I've always said about Baker Mayfield and Johnny Manziel and Jameis Winston and Cam Newton, if I see immaturity in college, it's a huge turnoff. Not saying you're not a franchise quarterback. I have no interest you being mine. Get boring, Zach Wilson. Stop being loose with the football, Zach Wilson. I don't want to show off. I want a franchise quarterback. But Baker Mayfield now has a legitimate coach, appears to have an excellent general manager, still don't trust ownership, but the roster's good. They're not paying him anything. So it's important for Cleveland now to decipher, is he the guy? And I think this needs to be reported, that Baker Mayfield suffered a partially torn labrum in his left shoulder back in September against the Texans. He has been wearing a shoulder harness to play. Now, he has good protection, a great running game, but if you're a pro athlete and are playing with a torn labrum, even if it's not in your throwing arm, I think it needs to be acknowledged. Baker's career has overwhelmingly been proving doubters wrong, a little short, not the athlete, was a walk-on a couple times in college. I think he has a chip on his shoulder and a toughness that is important for that position, and it's serving him very well. I said before this season, and this goes for every industry, your bosses will decide what they're going to do with you at least a year before they tell you. I came into this season and I said, the Giants will decide by Thanksgiving what's up with Daniel Jones. I believe the Giants have decided Daniel Jones is not the problem. Over his last 8 to 10 games, he has dramatically cut down on turnovers. He played very well on the road, beating the Saints. I think privately the Giants feel, we've got our guy. We can win with him. 6'5", pretty athletic. He's cut down on his biggest liability. Now, with Baker Mayfield, I think the lean is to pay him a bunch of money. In Los Angeles, the standards are greater. Everybody wins here. You got to be competitive. We don't rest on our laurels. Jared Goff got to a Super Bowl. They bailed on him. In Los Angeles, Baker wouldn't get re-signed. Josh Allen would. Herbert would. But it's Los Angeles. But this is Cleveland. And I do think Baker is a winning quarterback now, and it's going to be hard to move off him. But I will say this. The next 8 weeks are going to determine a lot. Because not only does Cleveland play good teams, but in the next 8 weeks, they face Justin Herbert, Kyler Murray, Joe Burrow, Mac Jones, Lamar Jackson twice. What does that mean? Side by side with young quarterbacks. And Andrew Berry, the general manager, is going to be upstairs looking at Kyler's possessions. And now it's Baker's turns and Justin Herbert's possessions. And now it's Baker's turn and it's Lamar. And if Baker doesn't stack up, the eyes don't lie and he's not winning games, he'll be in trouble. Because the litmus test is not the first 2 years when he didn't have the right coach. It is now. And it's not beating Pittsburgh. Big Ben's an old man. It's a bad team. How does he look? Because once you pay him big money, the roster tends to decline. You're not going to have free agent right tackles that are Pro Bowl level players. You can't just go get an interior defensive lineman or a pass rusher or have Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham and Austin Hooper, and you don't get the ands. You can't go get a John Johnson. Your roster declines. You need more from the quarterback. So I think the next 8 weeks, when you have these young star quarterbacks side by side with Baker, how does he stack up? Now, my gut feeling is Baker's going to play well. He'll get re-signed, but it'll be interesting. If Kyler Murray looks fantastic and Justin Herbert is amazing and he faces Herbert this week and Lamar Jackson and they're all coming out and Baker's throwing up a few more of those Viking games, that's where people have to make decisions. Now, Cleveland's standard is not very high. It's not. And it's going to be very hard to move off a playoff quarterback. It's very tough in Cleveland. It's very easy in Los Angeles. They moved off a Super Bowl quarterback. They move off stars here all the time.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so Joy, I do a Blazing Five on Friday. Last week we went 3-3. We gave you an extra pick. We took the Chargers on Monday. We went 3-3. I'm going to do it again, not because this is a trend, but my second favorite bet of the week is tonight. So this counts on my Blazing Five. Last week we went 6 picks, 3-3. Kind of got hosed. Not going to get into it. Here we go today.
Rams at Seahawks.
I'm going to take the Rams to win this game and cover the spread. The Rams are, under Sean McVay, are great after a loss, 15-5. McVay's been great against Seattle, 6 wins in 9 games. They have the fewest penalty yards in the league. This is a very disciplined team. It matters when you go on the road. They have the second highest third down percentage in the NFL. They translate thirds to firsts, kills the crowd noise. Couple that with Seattle's problem. Their defense is on pace to be the worst in the Super Bowl era. And Seattle is not an efficient team. They have the lowest time of possession in the NFL. They have the fewest offensive plays, second only to the Jags. Oh, actually, they have the fewest. They have 14 three and outs. That is worst in the league except the Jags. You have a sputtering offense that can fool people because of the exceptional big plays by Russell Wilson. They don't do a lot well beyond Russell Wilson. They don't get you out on third down. The Rams are great on third down. I think the Rams control the clock, quiet the crowd, take a lead, and win 34-27. This is a very good matchup for the Rams off a loss, and McVay is great off losses. Also, Matt Stafford didn't play particularly well. I don't think he'll struggle in back-to-back weeks, especially against the defense that couldn't get Ryan Tannehill off the field, that struggled to get Carson Wentz and that bad offensive line these days in Indianapolis off the field.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, there we go. Greg Cosell, 42 years, NFL Films, joins us live. All right, you're not into the gambling stuff, blah, 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 but you are into the personnel stuff. And I was saying I think the Seattle Seahawks have a problem. I don't think they're very good at corner. I think they can be at times thin. I think they struggle to get teams off the field. The Rams are pretty good at extending thirds downs to first downs. I like the Rams matchup tonight a lot. What does the film say on the personnel matchups tonight?
Well, the Seahawks have really struggled on defense for a number of reasons. They're a very high percentage zone coverage defense. They've played the second lowest percentage of cover one, which is man coverage with a single high safety of any team in the NFL. They play a ton of split safety coverage, two shell safety coverages, and they've really struggled in zone with their responsibilities. There's a lot of open voids in their zone coverages. And that's something they need to get fixed. All coverages, all zone coverages, Colin, have voids. Otherwise, everybody would play the same zone coverage. They all have voids. But you have to understand, as a defensive coach, and get across to your players where those voids are and how we can shrink those voids or take away those voids against certain receiver looks, against certain splits, against certain route concepts. Otherwise, you just get eaten up. People can think back a few weeks ago when they played the Vikings. The Vikings just killed them in their zone coverage concepts. It looked like pitch and catch. There was no one around a number of times Justin Jefferson caught the ball in the middle of the field. So this is a defense that's really struggling. They play a lot of zone, and they're not playing it at a very high level right now.
Yeah, and the Rams have a very smart offensive coach and terrific weapons. Van Jefferson, yes. Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp. So it's a very – DeSean Jackson. It's a very deep offensive skill group. Okay, so the Cardinal offense, you've been very complimentary of Kyler Murray. Is there a way to slow it down? Is there anything they do occasionally struggle with when you look at the film, Greg?
Well, I think where they've really improved, quite honestly, is because of Kyler Murray's ability to make throws from the pocket, Colin. Because we know he can make those special second reaction movement plays. That's part of who he is. That will always be part of his game. But I think this year in particular, because I don't think, to me, Cliff Kingsbury isn't doing a whole lot different tactically. Yes, they have some better weapons on the outside, and they line up with four wide receivers more than any other team in the league, but they did the same thing a year ago. Obviously, the players this year are better, but it's Murray's increased efficiency from the pocket. That's the big reason why he's played so well and why the offense is really singing right now. Last year and his rookie year, he missed far too many routine NFL throws with poor ball location. He's gotten much better in that regard, and therefore he's able to play within the structure of the offense much more effectively.
Well, Daniel Jones of the Giants has cut down on his turnovers. Jason Garrett, I talked to him last year. He said, you just can't win in this league fumbling the ball and throwing interceptions. So he cut down last year. He's cut down this year. Now, so there is improvement when you don't turn the ball over. Is Daniel, because I picked the Giants to beat the Saints last week, I thought they'd upset him. Has he improved as a passer, or is his improvement just avoiding turnovers?
Well, I think he's a far more comfortable player for this reason, and it's shown up this year. Their O-line, which was much maligned a year ago, and even through the preseason, has actually played very well in pass protection, and he's clearly more comfortable because he's kind of a statuesque passer, throws the ball well, looks good, looks the part, and he's clearly more comfortable. I think back to 2 weeks ago, I know they lost the game when they played the Washington football team, and they really controlled that pass rush, and he was very efficient in that game. This week against the Saints, they controlled the Saints, and the Saints are difficult to deal with their front looks and their pressures, and the Giants' O-line did a very good job. I think Andrew Thomas, their second-year left tackle, has really advanced and is playing well. And now they have Tony, Kadarius Tony, who they move around quite a bit,
yes.
Plays outside, plays inside.
Yes.
And I think you'll see more of him as a movable chess piece as they go forward.
Yeah.
So Jones has always thrown the ball well, Colin. That was not the issue. The issue was he was not secure in the pocket. He would get very uncomfortable, and then you'd get the turnovers. He's only thrown one pick this year. It was on a Hail Mary at the end of the first half this week. He's actually looked very good, and people might not be taking notice because the Giants are just 3-1. 1-3, but he's played well this year.
Let's talk about the team they played this week, the Cowboys. Early in the season, Tony Pollard appeared to be a little ahead of Zeke. Zeke then emerged last week. I thought he had some juice. Do you feel when you watch the Cowboys, although we pay such great attention to their wide receiver unit, it's substantially talented, do they feel, though, more like a running team when you watch the film? What do you see?
Yeah, they're not abiding by the NFL rules, Colin. They're running the football. I didn't think you were allowed to do that in today's NFL. The last three games, their first down running numbers are off the charts, and they're running more than they're throwing the ball on first down by a meaningful amount. And they've been so successful doing it. Dak has thrown the ball. I think he's had three games in a row with less than 30 pass attempts.
Yeah.
And by the way, he's playing at a very, very high level. They're just not throwing it an awful lot because their run game on first down has been so good. I think defensively, too, is they need to be spoken about. I think Dan Quinn has, in a sense, taken a page from the Belichickian book of defense with a lot of different front looks, a lot of movement with the fronts, and a lot of man coverage on the back end. So it's front multiplicity and coverage consistency with man coverage, and they're doing it extremely well.
Yeah. Speaking of Belichick, you know, Brady did not have a terribly efficient night. And it was wet and sloppy, but Tom's played in that before. He's always been a very good bad weather quarterback. What did Belichick do to, you know, he certainly didn't confuse him, but Tom was off his game. What did you see right from the film?
Well, I think the film showed you that on the back end, he was essentially pretty static until the Bucs got inside the 30-yard line, and then you saw more combinations and coverage and hybrid coverages. But the large majority of what they did was they played cover one, man coverage with a single high safety, and they simply matched up. They put Jackson on Evans. They put Jones on Brown. They put Mills on Godwin. That's predominantly how they played. Where the multiplicity came from, just like I spoke about Dan Quinn, the multiplicity came from their fronts. They did a lot with their front looks. They moved people around. They stunted. The whole focus of their pressures, which of course is what you do with Tom Brady, was inside. But Brady missed a bunch of throws, Colin, that he normally makes that didn't really have anything to do with what Bill Belichick did.
You know, we'll spend a lot of time on the Chargers offense because Justin Herbert is a sensational young player. But Brandon Staley has taken over this defense and held each opponent to their lowest point total of the year.
Yeah.
He's a young coach. I mean, this guy was coaching at John Carroll, wherever that is, you know, 5 years ago.
Cleveland, 5 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, I'm John Carroll alum, apparently, on the show right now, Greg Cosell. So I'm glad.
No, I'm not. I'm an Amherst alum, Colin. You know?
Oh, that's a brain school. All right, here we go. You tell me about Staley. What does he do? Because this Charger defense looks really buttoned up.
Yeah, Staley, what he's doing this year. See, everybody spoke last year about, oh boy, he plays cover four, and that's the new thing in the NFL, everybody playing more split safety. And what happens, of course, is anything you do, offenses then pick up on it, and they start to do better against it. That's kind of what's starting to happen now with split safety. But this year, he's playing a lot more man coverage concepts, both cover one and two man, where you have two deep safeties. He's well over 60% wow. in playing those two coverages, man coverage concepts. So he's really decided to go more of the man coverage route, and it's been very effective. It was very effective against the Chiefs. We saw what happened this past week against the Raiders on Monday night. But he is a very, very smart guy. And you saw, I'm sure a lot of people saw what he said about the importance of the run game.
Yeah.
And that video has gone viral, obviously. And he made some great, great points about that. He's a very smart coach.
Justin Fields got his second start. And from what I saw, there is improvement. But you look at film. What did the film say about Justin Fields?
Well, they did some of the same things that they did the week before against Cleveland. They just played a defense that wasn't as good. So they did some quick game throws, which is five-man protection. And the difference in this game was that the throws were there and Fields was not under pressure when he made those throws. But the other thing they added, and of course people are going to talk about Bill Lazor's influence, was they added a lot more of the play-action pass game. And what you get with the play-action pass game is you get more maximum protection concepts, six-man pass protection concepts, seven-man pass protection concepts, and that allowed Fields to drive the ball down the field. And he throws with excellent velocity. And a lot of those route concepts, they're not really reads per se. You know what you're going to get. One reason I believe you call seven-man protections is because you know what the coverage is going to be. You feel very good about that. And you know that with just three eligible receivers that you can break down the coverage.
Well, Aaron Rodgers, after a turbulent week one, is playing well. Their numbers just keep getting better and better. Their O-line actually has performed better than I thought without their all-pro center and their left tackle, and they've had banged up a little bit. But he is very difficult to defend. I'm sure you're seeing that on the film.
Yeah, and I think they've also run the ball with consistency. I think their offense has become a little more balanced to some degree. Balance is a relative term, of course, but they are running the football. And I don't think any of us who were reasonable thought that after week one that all of a sudden Aaron Rodgers couldn't play, Colin.
Right.
You know, every once in a while, great quarterbacks have bad games,
right.
And great and good offenses have bad games. But he's very efficient within that offense. This is a really highly structured offense that Matt LaFleur has, and it's very structured. It's very efficient. It presents opportunities, and teams try to take away certain things. And Aaron Rodgers is so smart. And that's really the play that I want to show. It's from last week against the Steelers. And we can go to that play because I think it's very reflective of what Rodgers is and how good he is. And this was a touchdown he threw to Randall Cobb.
Yeah.
But there's a number of different elements to this play. And one of the things they really like to do is they like to line up with Devonta Adams as the single receiver to the short side of the field on the back side of trips. He's the boundary X. And what happens here is you get the press man corner and you get Minkah Fitzpatrick on that side. So now on the other side, you get Randall Cobb, who's the number two receiver in the trips look. And what they're going to do with him is essentially they're going to double him. So now what you're going to get here is we're going to start with Adams, because Adams is the receiver that Rodgers always likes to go to when he thinks he has one-on-one. But this is not going to be one-on-one, because what you're going to see is Minkah Fitzpatrick, immediately his eyes go right to Devonta Adams. Whether it's a pure double or not, I can't answer that, but his eyes go right there. So now to the other side, you get the press man on Cobb, and then you get the safety Edmonds. This is a double because you can see the corner allow him to go inside, and you can see Edmonds move inside to bracket him. The one thing Edmonds cannot allow to happen is for Cobb to cross his face into the middle of the field, because as you can see, there's no one there. So what happens? He crosses his face and presents a clean throw for Rodgers and a touchdown. So when you design a coverage and it's not played the way you design it, these kinds of things can happen. And Rodgers saw that immediately, as he sees pretty much everything immediately.
Yeah, and his ball placement, as usual, was great.
Oh, it's big time.
Yep. Greg, great seeing you again. We appreciate it on a Thursday.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
Three Pro Bowls, first tight end in NFL history, three consecutive 1,000-yard seasons, and he is crushing it, as we knew he would as a broadcaster. A lot of networks were after him, and we stiff-armed them and got Greg Olsen. So, first of all, you had the Panthers-Cowboys game,
yep.
And I know it's impossible to have relationships and not – I've always said this. Troy Aikman loves the Cowboys. He can be critical of him, but he's got friends there. You must be happy to see Sam Darnold reborn and an aggressive ownership group. I really like – now, I do think Dallas is better than we think, but that must feel great, because I do feel like Carolina is not a championship club, but their defense makes them fairly viable week to week, right?
Yeah, I think right now they're a playoff contender, and I think anyone 2 years ago when they started that rebuild, they shipped me out of there.
Right.
Luke retired. I think if their fan base said, hey, in a couple years, we're going to be back and competing at a high level, everyone would have signed up for it. I think they're probably ahead of the curve.
A little bit.
They're probably ahead of schedule for maybe if you got some real truth talk from ownership and Matt Rhule. It's probably a little ahead of where they thought they would be. But yeah, I mean, it's fun to see them succeed. I have a lot of buddies there, a lot of friends there. It's funny, I called the game last week. Panther fans thought I was too critical, and Cowboys fans thought I was being a homer. So it's kind
welcome
of
to our world.
You can't now, make anybody happy.
What do you make of Sam Darnold? He's been productive. Even against the Cowboys, he had four touchdowns. So he's productive. Do you worry about his reckless nature?
You know, I think he's playing really well. I think he had a tough spurt there in the third quarter. He threw those back-to-back picks to Diggs, who you can make a case is the early front runner for defensive player of the
terrific
year.
Terrific player.
His pace of what he's doing forcing turnovers is incredible. You know, he threw one bad ball into zone. He just threw it right into Diggs' chest. The next pick, Diggs just sat at the sticks and said, I'm just going to drive this next route. He jumped in front of DJ Moore. Outside of that, what he's been doing with his legs, I mean, he's rushed for 5-6 touchdowns.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy, he's a better athlete than people think. He's throwing on rhythm. He's throwing off script. He's throwing on the move. They don't protect him great. That concerns me a little bit.
That's the weakest unit.
I think so. I think McCaffrey will be back at some point, probably sooner than later. If they can figure out the offensive line and weather some of the defensive injuries, I think they have a chance. Do I think they're going to win the division? I don't think they can end up beating Brady in Tampa. Can they get one of those wild card teams? Absolutely.
Let's talk Cowboys. I said this this week that I trust my eyes. And when I watched Dallas in the first several weeks, I kept saying to Joy on Mondays, they're way faster than they were last year.
Yeah.
Like you can see they're rangier.
you saw them up close. They disrupted Carolina.
They did. And I think the biggest thing, and just last week from studying them and seeing some of the stuff from last week and then talking to Dan Quinn, it's as much schematically defensively. We all knew their offense was great. Dak's playing equally, if not better, than the record pace he was at last year.
Right.
You could argue at the end of the year, if he won the MVP, you'd say, yeah, I through four games, yeah, that makes complete sense. He's playing at a high level, the run game. The issue has always been defensively. They have a culture change there now with Dan Quinn. I don't know if statistically at the end of the year it's going to be a complete pendulum swing and they're going to be a top five defense. I don't know if they're there yet, but there's a different culture there. They don't feel like the stepchild to the offense anymore. They're taking a lot of pride. Micah Parsons, young guy, first round pick, playing all over the place, brings a little edge. Diggs has a little edge. You know, and they get DeMarcus Lawrence back. He's not even playing. He's probably their best defensive player. I don't know if they're a statistically top elite defense. I think their defense with the turnovers and the style of play complements their offense really well.
Yeah.
Their offense can beat you any way they have to.
That's right.
I think it's another formula in an average division. You'd imagine that they're going
to
win it.
Well, they had my knock on the Cowboys for years. They were paying great money to good players, and the only way to even that out is you got to hit some home runs in the draft where you're not paying great players good money. Micah Parsons, Trayvon Diggs are great players.
Great.
And you're getting them for free, kind of.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's the only way to even out, because they do have some players who are paid beyond what they're capable of. Zeke, I think, is good. I don't think he's worth that, but whatever. It's pro sports. So I want to go to, you're calling the Eagles Panthers this week, so you're already looking at film. I like Carolina in this spot. I think their defense feels they were a little embarrassed. It was a Cowboy game. There's a lot of young quarterbacks out there. I'm not a huge believer in Hurts because I worry about his accuracy. He misses a lot of layups, where I think most of these young quarterbacks, that's not an issue for me. What do you see on film with Hurts that you like and that would concern you? Because he doesn't have a ton of starts.
Yeah, so I had him week one down in Atlanta, and he played pretty well.
Yes.
It wasn't a real explosive game plan, a lot of RPO stuff, quick game, threw a long screen for a touchdown. But they played well. They completely dominated and controlled the game. Then they had some struggles there. Cowboys embarrassed them a little bit on Monday night a couple weeks ago. He came under fire, threw the pick six to Diggs. Last week, albeit Kansas City, you talked about it before I came on, their defense isn't great by any stretch.
And that's what the film says.
He really played well last week.
He did.
They had three touchdowns called back. Their penalty situation with Philadelphia is incredible. They had three touchdowns called back. They lead the league in penalties, averaging like 11 penalties a game. It's something outrageous. And last week, three of them came at the result of touchdowns being taken off the board. They were in that game. Their defense got zero stops. Neither team punted. It was really just a race up and down the field. I wouldn't say he went head-to-head with Mahomes. I think it's hard to compare anybody to Mahomes. But for a young guy who, in all essence, is a rookie.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought last week against Kansas City, he was far and away the best he's been this year. The offense gave them a chance. Defensively, they just can't get off the field. Kansas City was 9 of 10 on third downs. I mean, it's not sustainable, right? That model of bend, don't break is only sustainable if you can get off the field on third down. They can't. Kansas City went up and down the field, which they do on a lot of people, but defensively is where they got let down last week. Jalen Hurts, I thought, played pretty well.
Oh, that's great. You know, we have Trey Lance not quite ready. Justin Fields gets a start. Mac Jones has been under control, fairly low ceiling. Trevor Lawrence has to carry his team. I was saying, I think we said this yesterday, the young quarterbacks have all kind of been what I thought. They really have. I didn't think Trey Lance was ready, but he was athletic. I thought Justin Fields was alive, a lot of juice, but would struggle early. I thought Mac had a ceiling, but would figure it out really quick. And I think Trevor Lawrence would be spectacular, but make a bunch of mistakes. And Jalen Hurts, to you, so far has been probably better than I've given him credit for. When you look at the Justin Fields situation, you know Chicago well. I've got my issues with their front office. I like Matt Nagy. It's not a great O-line. Montgomery's hurt. Allen Robinson has sort of disappeared. So the next four games, he's got Brady, he's got Aaron Rodgers, he's got Derek Carr. It's not a lot of W's here. What should I look for? Let's not base it on W's. What should I see as a novice, as a guy that's been in the game and looks at film? What will you see with Justin Fields? And even if it's 38-20, and you'll go, that works.
Yeah, so we called his debut a couple weeks ago against Cleveland.
Uh-huh.
And across the board, it was a disaster. It was hard to watch. I felt for the kid. My issues coming out of that game was I didn't feel like he was put in a position to do what he does well, right? we can't go into a game plan with Andy Dalton, who has a certain set of skill sets and an experience level and whatnot, and try to do the exact same thing with Justin Fields. We need to, if we're going to make this work, we need to build around the guy's
skill set. Well, you know, Cam had a skill set that you build around.
Cam, they built around Lamar. They build around guys who have out-of-the-box unique skill sets. Justin Fields is probably somewhere in the middle. He's not Lamar, but he's not your prototypical pocket guy who you're just going to sit back there and do five-step drops and throw on time in rhythm. That's just not where he is, especially for a young guy. Move him, run him, get him out of the pocket, Boot. Give him some RPO stuff, get him outside the box, give him some easy completions. And I had a chance to talk to Ryan Day, his college coach. He said the best thing he did was throw the ball accurately down the field.
Yeah, he does.
He never threw the ball down the field, right? So everyone has this idea, we got to protect a young quarterback, underneath routes, quick game, all that. That might be good for most young guys, but if that's not the best for Justin Fields, if he's better intermediate to long passing game, let's do it. Drop back there and rip it and throw it. Now, they couldn't block Myles Garrett. He had 5 sacks. It was a disaster across the board. What I want to see out of the next 4 games, forget the wins and losses, be efficient. Develop a system that has a long-term ability to be sustainable. What we see in the next 4 weeks is that a little preview of what the Bears offense can be for the next few years with this staff and with Justin Fields. If that seems like it's starting to trend in that direction, the next 4 weeks will be a success.
All right, there's so many great young quarterbacks right now. It's so fun for me as a sportscaster. So Kyler Murray, he made a run on 3rd and 15 last week that I felt so bad because the defense was all lined up perfectly, and he just went, ooh, and the defensive coordinator's like, okay, what are you going to do? He's Russell Wilson, but faster. I mean, what do you make of him?
It's a great comparison because he is. He's the guy that you can have the perfect call at the right time. Russ is this way at, you know, back in the day, Cam was this way, where you have everybody covered. Your pass rush almost gets home, and it turns into a 3rd and 7. He runs for 15. You can't touch him. You can't catch him. And it's back to first down. You're like, I don't know what else to do.
There isn't much to do.
His feet, he's like running a million miles an
hour.
And
he never looks like he's gassing it.
He's a really interesting guy to watch. But I'll tell you, he's playing, again, we said it about Dak. It's a funny year. There's probably 5 or 6, traditionally it's quarterbacks, who at this stage of the season, you said, if that guy was the MVP, I could see it. He's up there, Dak. I mean, Justin Herbert's not far off.
Let's talk about Herbert. Now, he's a more stationary quarterback. Did you watch him in college?
I was telling you during the break, being an East Coast guy and him playing up in Oregon, playing a lot of Pac-12 games on the West Coast, I don't know if I really appreciated him as much in college, right? We all saw Tua, we saw Jalen Hurts, we see more of the East Coast quarterbacks.
SEC
come out.
Football.
The SEC, yeah, a lot of SEC. He's incredible. I mean, watching him play the other night, on Monday night, I mean, he needs to be at the top, if not the top. Like, when you start saying that next generation, right? Everyone, Mahomes dominates the conversation. He's really close.
Big arm.
He's really close. I mean, you can't put him in Mahomes' category yet, but I don't think there's a real big drop, and he's the next guy in my mind.
Do you believe, like, when you play with somebody that's great, like, is somebody that played at a high level for 15 years, do you think, like, Charger players know what they have?
I think they do. The veterans do.
The veterans do.
The veterans do. The veterans who've played with other guys, not knocking them or where they came from, especially guys from other teams, whatever their journey's been, they're now in L.A. playing with this young guy. They know. You know fast.
Yeah.
Because most quarterbacks you play with aren't that caliber. They're not Russell Wilson. They're not Justin Herbert. You know, they're good, serviceable guys. And all of a sudden you see an elite guy and you're like, he's different.
He's different.
I'm going to hitch my wagon to this guy.
So tonight, Seahawks-Rams, you're on the Fox pregame show. You were talking about something during the break that is, it's really interesting, and I want to share it with the audience. I put my arms around analytics, but I think football's different because it's the most situational sport, and you're as good as your quarterback. So you were talking about defenses and what analytic people say about defense. So let's start with that.
Yeah, we were talking, the analytics aspect of football, right? The hardest thing to replicate year in and year out is defense, more specifically pass defense, right? So you talk about the Rams. They were abnormally great last year. The analytics say, now, they lost their D coordinator, they lost a few in free agency, but that's kind of the message, is the hardest thing to do year in and year out is replicate elite level defense, and more specifically pass defense. They almost always regress to the mean. So to expect a team that was so off the charts defensively last year, a la the Rams, to come back and match it, it's been done. The Seattles of the world a few years ago, the San Francisco 49ers.
The window closes very quickly.
All of a sudden, guys start getting big contracts. Your D coordinator moves on, and he's now the head coach somewhere else. Things change fast. It's hard. Offense, you can have sustained excellence for a long time.
Well, if you have the right quarterback.
Because you have the quarterback. That's right. The difference.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah. So tonight, Rams Seahawks. And I'm from the Pacific Northwest, so I have a soft spot for the Seahawks, but I've said this over the last 3 to 4 years. You know, it's the drip, drip, drip. All of a sudden, the dam bursts. They're not – Seattle doesn't do a lot well that's not connected to Russell Wilson. You look at the film. Is it schemes? Is it they're not good? They play a ton of zone, which tells you they don't trust their corners. It's they want a pass rush, but they have to play passively on the back end. What is wrong with their defense? Is it just personnel?
You know, so I got an up-close look at it last year, right? I was inside the organization. I saw the good. I saw the bad. Now, speaking defensively, last year was kind of the tale of two halves, right? The defense got off to a slow start, trying to find their way. We didn't have the offseason. You know, Jamal Adams got traded in, getting him up to speed. The defense kind of struggled to find their way. So what did the offense do? They said, here, Russ, go throw for 400 yards a game, throw 5 touchdowns a game, because we got to just outscore everybody.
Right.
And Russ was the MVP of the first third of the season, half of the season. All of a sudden, then the defense kind of found their groove, right? They got some really good players. Bobby Wagner is a Hall of Fame player. Jamal Adams is an elite level player. I mean, they got some pieces, right? For whatever reason, though, they're having a hard time finding how that all meshes to play true high-end defense that we all assume Seattle plays.
Right.
That's Pete Carroll's calling card. And then last year, as the defense got a little better, they started putting the handcuffs back on Russ a little bit. Run game, play action, nakeds, boots, don't turn the ball over. And they kind of took the keys out of his hand. For them to be, he's the ultimate fixer. They need to give him the keys to the car and say, we're going to live and die with him playing. He's the best off-script quarterback in the NFL, and it's not by accident. He practices that way. He practices scramble drill. I used to think from a distance he was out there just like making stuff up. He's not. It's on purpose.
So he practices that.
Their scramble drills and their broken free plays that is practiced. It's a legitimate scheme, and that's all Russell-driven. He's the ultimate fixer. He's got some – now, Lockett and DK – Chris Carson, you said before, is one of my all-time favorite teammates I've ever been around.
Really?
That dude is amazing. DK, amazing. Lockett, Dwayne Brown. I mean, they got a lot of pieces.
Now, they have a new coordinator. Yep. So, listen, you've been honest that last year the offense, when you were there, could be frustrating. It wasn't very creative. Do you feel they've taken a step in the creativity department?
A little bit. I still think the franchise philosophy is always going to limit what the coordinator is able to do.
It's Pete's franchise.
Right? It's a defensive. It's a run game. It's a win the turnover battle, grind it out, win the game in the fourth quarter. We don't need to blow anyone out by 40. Like, it's just not their philosophy. And it's served them well. I mean, Pete Carroll's won a lot of games. That franchise has won as many games in the last decade as anybody.
Yeah.
So it works. It's just not the model that we're used to seeing in the NFL of today, where it's a race to score 40 points.
I don't want to pick on athletes because I could never do anything, but Big Ben looks old. It's not difficult. It's an eye test. Eyes don't lie. And a lot of it is Ben was never viewed as highly efficient. He was a playmaker. He moved. So when you take away the dynamic playmaking and you're left to his efficiency, it's average. And they don't have a great O-line. It's in rebuild. When did you know as a professional athlete? Was there a practice, a moment, a rehab when you're just like, I don't have the juice?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It really happened fast. You know, I went 10, 11 years, never hadn't missed a game. Missed the first game or two of my rookie year. I got hurt in training camp, something minor. And then played however many games in a row, 10 years worth of games. And always took for granted my health, always took for granted. And then in year 11, I broke my foot. Came back. I knew I wasn't going to feel great. The next year, broke it again. Ever since I broke it in 2017, 2018, like, no matter how much I rehabbed, no matter how much I went, like, I just didn't have my juice.
Right? Did it hurt when you played?
No, I didn't hurt. I just, no matter how much I tried to mentally push through it, no matter how much I would train, no matter how much I changed my diet, at some point, all the routes, all the wear and tear, all the getting banged around, eventually your body just says, I've had enough. It was lower body stuff. You know, you can rehab a shoulder. For a guy like me,
yeah,
I made my living running. Right, like I wasn't catching 3, 4, 5 yard routes. When I played with Cam for 10 years, we were averaging 14 yards a catch. I mean, we were down the field pushing. Right. I was running. Once I kind of lost my calling card, you now become a different version of what made you good. And it, the last couple of years, I just a disconnect, you know?
Yeah. We only have a minute left. Tomlin and Aaron Rodgers flirting. And I told Joy, he's too smart. He's too manipulative for me to just think, name the one team in the NFL that has a great defensive coach and great defense and great receivers that'll be open next year.
It makes too much sense.
Right.
And it's a storied franchise. It's a legitimate contender.
He wouldn't disappear.
He goes into the AFC. Right? It's just a whole different experience.
So I'm not being hyperbolic.
He's playing primetime games. He's got a proven coach.
He's got a big brand, advertisers. He's the Steelers. He's on NBC, puts him on 4 games. Fox puts him on 5.
Of course. And he's...
So you bought in, the flirt is something.
I think it's real. I don't think it's, do they have the roster that Tom Brady inherited down in Tampa? I don't know. Brady inherited a pretty
unique... Well, O-line was the issue for both.
True. They got some playmakers. They got some guys to throw the ball to. If that happened, everyone said, yeah, that's the most obvious choice, which... We'll see if it follows that path or not.
Good luck. You've been great. You're on Fox tonight. We're calling it the greatest Thursday night game. Remember like 7, 8 years ago, the Thursday night games?
Yeah.
It was the Bumblebees from Pittsburgh and the terrible uniforms.
I loved it.
You did?
I loved when we used to wear the Thursday night color rush. I loved color rush.
Jersey Mike's. Order it on your mobile app. Jersey Mike's. Be a sub above. Try the number 7, turkey provolone.